Greetings, this is Tyler McFeeters with your News Gazette, dated Friday, December 26th, 2025. We'll begin with a front page story. United Association Local 149, like father, like son. Matt and Cameron Faulkner, the second and third generation in a family of plumbers, connect over job. Story by Luke Taylor. Out of Urbana. After 37 years working in plumbing and pipe fitting, Matt Faulkner was preparing to hang up the hat on his career when he found himself on a job with a dream coworker, his son, Cameron Faulkner. "It was one of the highlights of my career," Cameron said. "I know it may sound corny, but I mean, who wouldn't want to work a little bit of time with their dad?" Cameron marks the third generation of United Association Local 149 plumbers in the Faulkner family, beginning with Matt's father, Bruce. UA Local 149 represents plumbers, pipe fitters, and HVAC technicians in East Central Illinois who work at places like the University of Illinois, Eastern Illinois University, and Carl Health, just to name a few. That means that despite ostensibly working together as members of the same union, Matt and Cameron weren't exactly crossing paths often. They ran into each other on a job last summer, too. But when Cameron called Matt up during a job replacing a storm pump near the Carl R. Woese Institute for Genomic Biology building in early December, so close to Matt's retirement, it felt even more significant. "My superintendent said to give the U of I plumbing shop a buzz and see where they're okay with tying in this water," Cameron said. "Yeah, he's got a hotline to the plumbing shop," Matt said. "He called me and said, 'Hey, Dad.' They spent a few hours together tracking down what they needed, but that was just the latest moment in a lifetime of bonding over their career." Matt brought that career to a close just before Christmas. Cameron hopes to continue his for years to come. "If you work hard, you're able to have nice things." Like his father before him, Cameron said he was inspired to go into plumbing in part because he saw what it did for his family growing up. "I grew up in a nice home. When I went to my grandpa's, he had a really nice home and nice vehicles. You can't not want that," he said. "At about 10 years old, you start figuring it out and want to see yourself in that spot at some point. I knew that I needed to work hard and go to work every day to get those things so that my kids could see that path as well." Matt said it was the same for him as with Bruce, as his dad. "We grew up not really wanting anything. If I wanted or needed a new ball glove, my dad bought it, you know. It wasn't all about material benefits to the family, either. For Cameron, Matt's career in plumbing meant that even as hard as his dad worked, he knew he'd be present with the family plenty, too. He was home from work at 5 p.m. every single day, and Cameron noticed. "I knew for sure. You got to do all that stuff you aren't supposed to do before you got home, and that's a fact," Cameron said. "It is a fact, because I did the same thing with my dad," Matt said. That consistency meant a lot to both of them as kids, and knowing that his children were waiting for him at home was important to Matt, too. He remembers one day that he swung by the credit union to cash a check on the way home, delaying his arrival by no more than 15 or so minutes. "I got to the house, and my daughter is standing there at the curb bawling. She's like, 'Daddy, where have you been? It's 5 o'clock and you weren't here,' Matt said. I kind of attribute that to a work ethic and tried to instill good values on Cameron, too." Cameron said he has the same experience with his wife, expecting him to be home around the same time every day, and while his own kids are very young, they're coming to expect it too. On a similar note, both men appreciate working in a career that they don't find themselves bringing home at the end of the day. Matt remembers Cameron telling him that the one thing he was glad to have picked up from him as a father was his work ethic. Save some sick days, he was off to work, putting in the hours every single day. "You could see that it was enjoyable. It's something new every day. Basically, you're helping out people in a way they don't even know," Cameron said. "I like having something new to do every day. And I also knew that the pay was very well, and that if you work hard, you're able to have nice things." Making an impact. Plumbing might not sound like a necessarily altruistic career on its face, but both Matt and Cameron see it as a way that they're able to have a measurable positive impact on their community. In Cameron's previous role as a factory employee, he said he got frustrated with doing the same thing all the time, creating parts that would ultimately be sent off to some other warehouse. With plumbing, he's meeting clients face-to-face and seeing why his work matters. I didn't feel like I was helping anybody out, really, versus today, I'm fixing someone's tub that's all clogged up, and it's been backing up for 2 weeks or a week, and I'm going to go home at the end of the day knowing that I helped somebody out, Cameron said. Someone's going to be able to continue to shower in their own home. Both Cameron and Matt also find enjoyment in the process of problem-solving, treating each new job as a puzzle to make sure everything is up to code with the tools available and the least negative impact on the customer. They've also each had a chance to make an impact on their fellow union members. While Cameron is only just getting to a point where he's training new members, Matt has been in more leadership positions for some time and worked as an instructor for the union too. That's the whole thing, the whole brotherhood about a union, Matt said. You pass on your knowledge to the generation below you, and they pass it on too. Feelings on ending career, passing on legacy. Now that he's stepping away, Matt says his first priority is spending more time with family. I want to watch my grandkids grow up. That's the fun part, he said. Already, he's planning to pick them up from school once a week, just to make sure they spend time together. He'll also be taking the time to get into his hobbies, working on his Harleys and his 66 Mustang. I'm going to call it me time. It's my turn, Matt said. I've worked hard for it all my life. For Cameron, that same choice is still years away. He said he plans to keep working as long as his body allows, but he's happy to see his dad get the rest he deserves. You'll have plenty of time to tinker, go on a cruise in your car or your motorcycle, and not have to worry about what time to be back because you got work the next day, Cameron said. One day, I'll get there. The next front page story is Danville Development. Hot dog. Family bringing new life to former diner. January 1 target date for eatery to open. Story by Jennifer Bailey, out of Danville. Family and community mean a lot to Pete and Patty Meeker. They have been giving back to the community through tips and donations from their Paw Paw Pete's ice cream trailer for about 6 years to local veteran and cancer causes, with Pete being a veteran and having had cancer 4 times. Now the family is tackling running a restaurant in the former Leon's Diner near Carl at the riverfront. They hope to open Madison Square Hot Dogs and More, 210 North Logan Avenue, on January 1. That's the target date, Patty said. The restaurant will serve lunch and dinner, with hours planned for 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. Tuesday through Saturday, and 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Sunday. It will be closed Mondays. The retro diner building has gotten a refresh of paint, new flooring and entry area, curtains and decor. The bright red color accents have transitioned to an aqua ice cream color, the Meekers said, echoing their ice cream trailer. The restaurant can seat about 30 at tables and the counter. It will be a family affair, with Pete's brother Lonnie being cook and general manager. In addition to having worked in other restaurant kitchens previously, the guitarist was an original member of Grammy-winning musician Alison Krauss's band Union Station. He's a good cook, Pete said. All the other family members also plan to help out. Vermilion County native Pete, who last worked at Flexengate as a purchasing buyer, and Patty, whose last job was a CNA at Carl, in addition to being a family caretaker, graduated high school in Oakwood and live north of Danville. They met when Pete came home from Vietnam, and Pete's friend was dating Patty's friend. They were introduced to each other and now have been married for 53 years next August. The Meekers started their ice cream trailer because Pete wanted something to do post-retirement. I wanted something to keep me busy, he said. He thought about a concession trailer, but he didn't want to cook or clean up all the grease and such. They found an ice cream trailer from northern Indiana. It sat for a year or two after they purchased it before they got it cleaned up. The grandkids named the food truck after Pete, and it can be seen at various events such as the Ellsworth Park Fall Festival, Westville Labor Day activities, arts in the park, ball tournaments, church and school events, fairs, and elsewhere. They get contacted, too, for functions. It's a pretty busy little business, Patty said. We just do that to keep us busy. Now we're going to have plenty to keep us busy, Pete said of adding the restaurant. We try to also do some charitable work while we do it, he added. They donate to Operation Honor Guard, since he's a Vietnam veteran, and they donate to the American Cancer Society through the local Carl Oncology Department. We're pretty happy to be able to do that because the community is so gracious with their tips because they know that's where it's going, Patty said. The makers may have now been working since July to open their new restaurant endeavor. The building has all new kitchen appliances, refrigerators, and freezers. The counters are original, with new countertops. It was nice, but we made it our own, Patty said. Leon's Diner in Madison Square opened in the late 1960s, Pete said. Leon Thompson was friends with Pete's dad and was a police officer. Madison Square used to be a hub of activity with businesses, including a gas station where there originally, and a fire station and restaurant, grocery, and appliance stores. Patty's family also lived nearby, with her dad working at the Sinclair gas station. Patty's aunt and uncle had their first date at Leon's Diner. She said her brother also met his wife there, but she had never been to the building. There's been about 4 or 5 owners since for Leon's Diner, with it being a breakfast and lunch spot. Pete said that when they'd visit Carl at the riverfront, he'd see the diner building, in addition to when driving by. Pete's brother, Lonnie, whose wife passed away, also was looking to move back here from Tennessee. They discussed the restaurant, and it kind of snowballed from there. They wanted to name it something different, but not distract from the history. It's good history, Pete said. There's a lot of stories in this building. The hope is I can just sit back and watch after a while, he said. Patty said they've been getting really good responses from the neighborhood and people stopping by. Pete said it will boil down to is if the food is good and if they have repeat customers. It's been a culmination of a lot of ideas, he said. Moving over to national and world news. Justice Department. Few more weeks of Epstein files. Manhattan prosecutors and FBI have uncovered over 1 million more documents potentially related to case. Out of Washington in the AP. The Justice Department said Wednesday that it may need a few more weeks to release all of its records on the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein after suddenly discovering more than 1 million potentially relevant documents, further delaying compliance with last Friday's congressionally mandated deadline. The Christmas Eve announcement came hours after a dozen U.S. senators called on the Justice Department's watchdog to examine its failure to meet the deadline. The group, 11 Democrats and a Republican, told Acting Inspector General Don Berthiaume in a letter that victims deserve full disclosure and the peace of mind of an independent audit. The Justice Department said in a social media post that federal prosecutors in Manhattan and the FBI have uncovered over 1 million more documents that could be related to the Epstein case, a stunning 11th-hour development after department officials suggested months ago that they had undertaken a comprehensive review that accounted for the vast universe of Epstein-related materials. In March, Attorney General Pam Bondi told Fox News that a truckload of evidence had been produced after she ordered the FBI to deliver the full and complete Epstein files to my office. She issued the directive after saying she learned from an independent, unidentified source that the FBI in New York was in possession of thousands of pages of documents. In July, the FBI and Justice Department indicated in an unsigned memo that they had undertaken an exhaustive review and had determined that no additional evidence should be released. An extraordinary about-face from the Trump administration, which for months had pledged maximum transparency. The memo did not raise the possibility that additional evidence existed that officials were unaware of or had not reviewed. Wednesday's post did not say when the Justice Department was informed of the newly uncovered files. In a letter last week, Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche said Manhattan federal prosecutors already had more than 3.6 million records from sex trafficking investigations into Epstein and his longtime confidant Ghislaine Maxwell, though many were copies of material already turned over by the FBI. The Justice Department said its lawyers are working around the clock to review the documents and remove victims' names and other identifying information as required by the Epstein Files Transparency Act, a law enacted last month that requires the government to open its files on Epstein and Maxwell. "We will release the documents as soon as possible," the department said. "Due to the mass volume of material, this process may take a few more weeks." The announcement came amid increased scrutiny on the Justice Department's staggered release of Epstein-related records, including from Epstein victims and members of Congress. Republican Representative Thomas Massie of Kentucky, one of the chief authors of the law mandating the document release, posted Wednesday on X, "DOJ did break the law by making illegal redactions and by missing the deadline." Another architect of the law, Representative Ro Khanna, Democrat of California, said he and Massie will continue to keep the pressure on and noted that the Justice Department was releasing more documents after lawmakers threatened contempt. "A Christmas Eve news dump of a million more files only proves what we already know. Trump is engaged in a massive cover-up," Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, Democrat of New York, said after the DOJ's announcement. "The questions Americans deserve answered is simple. What are they hiding and why?" The White House on Wednesday defended the Justice Department's handling of the Epstein records. "President Trump has assembled the greatest cabinet in American history, which includes Attorney General Bondi and her team, like Deputy Attorney General Blanche, who are doing a great job implementing the president's agenda," spokeswoman Abigail Jackson said in a statement. After releasing an initial wave of records on Friday, the Justice Department posted more batches to its website over the weekend and on Tuesday. The Justice Department has not given any notice when more records might arrive. Records that have been released, including photographs, interview transcripts, call logs, court records, and other documents, were either already public or heavily blacked out, and many lacked necessary context. Records that hadn't been seen before include transcripts of grand jury testimony from FBI agents who described interviews they had with several girls and young women who described being paid to perform sex acts for Epstein. Other records made public in recent days include a note from a federal prosecutor from January 2020 that said Trump had flown on the financier's private plane more often than had been previously known, and emails between Maxwell and someone who signs off with the initial A. They contain other references that suggest the writer was Britain's former Prince Andrew. In one, A writes, "How's L.A.? Have you found me some new inappropriate friends?" In more national and world news, international counterterrorism raids detain dozens of suspected IS terrorists. Several attacks on Christmas, New Year's events were allegedly planned. Out of Istanbul and the AP, Istanbul police launched scores of simultaneous raids on Thursday, detaining over 100 suspected members of the militant Islamic State group who were allegedly planning attacks against Christmas and New Year's celebrations, authorities said. A statement from the Istanbul Chief Public Prosecutor's Office said police were tipped off that the extremist group had called for action, particularly against non-Muslims, during the celebrations. The office had issued warrants for 137 suspects, of whom 115 were detained. Officers also seized many firearms, cartridges, and documents during the raids. It said 124 locations were raided. The arrests came days after the Trump administration launched widespread military strikes in neighboring Syria to eliminate Islamic State fighters and weapons sites in retaliation for an ambush blamed on the group that killed two U.S. troops and an American civilian interpreter. Syrian security forces have also launched operations against IS in recent days, including two raids on the outskirts of Damascus, the Syrian capital. In those raids, Syrian officials said Taha al-Zoubi, identified as the IS leader in the Damascus area, was captured, and Mohammed Sahladeh, a senior IS commander in Syria, was killed. Top Turkish officials visited Syria earlier this week to discuss counterterrorism efforts against IS, among other issues. Next story is suspected gas explosion, heroism amid disaster. Rescuers rushed into flames to save nursing home residents. Two dead, more injured. Out of Bristol, PA, in the AP. Rescuers braved shooting flames, falling debris, and the threat of more explosions to evacuate dozens of nursing home residents after a blast ripped through a Pennsylvania facility, killing a resident and an employee, and setting off a frantic search of the wreckage. Officials said Wednesday they'd located everybody after hours of looking. The police chief of Bristol Township said he'd never seen such heroism, and a speech therapist working there described feeling the building shake on Tuesday's blast and hurriedly wheeling out a bed-bound resident, bed and all. They were running into a building that I could, from 50 feet away, could still smell gas and walls that looked like they were going to fall down, Police Chief Charles Winnick told reporters Wednesday. Responders spent hours digging through the badly damaged building and checking with hospitals into the night Tuesday to locate the missing. But officials said they didn't yet know the cause of the explosion, even though a utility crew had been on site investigating a reported gas leak. The blast sent 20 others to hospitals, including one person in critical condition. 19 people were still hospitalized Wednesday, Winnick said. The rest of the 120 residents were transferred to nearby nursing homes, officials said. The Bucks County Coroner's Office said the employee who died was 52-year-old Muthoni Nduthu. Authorities didn't immediately identify the resident who died at a Philadelphia hospital. Both victims were women. Nduthu's sister said she was a great mother to her sons, a great wife, a devout Catholic, and very involved in the community. A Kenyan immigrant, she went to nursing school, loved to cook, and was a hard worker, her sister Rose Muema said. She was an immigrant who came to make a difference in this country, and she did that, Muema said. The explosion was so powerful that it shook nearby houses for blocks in Bristol, about 20 miles northeast of Philadelphia. A wing of the facility, with the kitchen and cafeteria, was almost entirely destroyed, leaving the roof caved in, sections of walls completely missing, and windows on adjoining walls blown out. Debris littered the grounds. The next story in national and world news, Powerball, winning $1.8 billion ticket sold in Arkansas by Olivia Diaz of the Associated Press / Report for America. A Powerball ticket purchased at a gas station outside Little Rock, Arkansas, won a $1.817 billion jackpot in Wednesday's Christmas Eve drawing, ending the lottery game's 3-month stretch without a top prize winner. The winning numbers were 4, 25, 31, 52, and 59, with the Powerball number being 19. The winning ticket was sold at a Murphy USA in Cabot, lottery officials in Arkansas said Thursday. No one answered the phone Thursday at the location, which was closed for Christmas. The community of roughly 27,000 people is 26 miles northeast of Little Rock. Final ticket sales pushed the jackpot higher than previous expected, making it the second largest in U.S. history and largest Powerball prize of 2025, according to Powerball.com. The jackpot had a lump sum cash payment option of $834.9 million. Congratulations to the newest Powerball jackpot winner. This is truly an extraordinary, life-changing prize. Matt Strawn, Powerball Product Group Chair and Iowa Lottery CEO, was quoted as saying by the website. We also want to thank all the players who joined in this jackpot streak. Every ticket purchase helps support public programs and services across the country. The prize followed 46 consecutive drawings in which no one matched all six numbers. The last drawing with a jackpot winner was September 6th. When players in Missouri and Texas won $1.787 billion. Organizers said it is the second time the Powerball jackpot has been won by a ticket sold in Arkansas. It first happened in 2010. The last time someone won a Powerball jackpot on Christmas Eve was in 2011, Powerball said. The company added that the sweepstakes also has been won on Christmas Day 4 times, most recently in 2013. Powerball's odds of 1 in 292.2 million are designed to generate big jackpots, with prizes growing as they roll over when no one wins. And we have just some short time to fill in our first half hour, so I'm going to turn to history. Area history. In 1925, the year 1926 will bring more prosperity to the state of Illinois than has been enjoyed in the state since January 1923, according to George B. Arnold, state director of labor. Arnold, one of the few men who was not optimistic at the start of 1925, said he thinks the industries and labor will enjoy a prosperous year. In 1975, after much uncertainty about input and commodity prices and supplies, central Illinois farmers appear to have produced record crops and probably will pay record income taxes in the spring. In Champaign County, they produced an average of 150 bushels of corn per acre and 46 bushels of soybeans, both records. In 1910, an 1893 home with an extensive 1920s-era addition designed by architect George Ramey was recently listed on the National Register of Historic Places. The National Park Service added the George and Elsie Mattis House, 900 West Park Avenue, Champaign, to its listings earlier this month. In international history, today's highlight, on December 26, 2004, a 9.1 magnitude earthquake beneath the Indian Ocean off the Indonesian island of Sumatra triggered a tsunami with waves up to 100 feet high that killed about 230,000 people across a dozen countries as far as East Africa. The worst affected countries were Indonesia, Sri Lanka, India, and Thailand. On this date, in 1908, Jack Johnson became the first black boxer to win the World Heavyweight Championship as he defeated Canadian Tommy Burns in Sydney, Australia. In 1941, during World War II, Winston Churchill became the first British Prime Minister to address a joint meeting of the U.S. Congress, just 2 weeks after the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor that plunged the U.S. into the war. And we will take a short break now and return with the second half hour of your News Gazette, dated Friday, December 26th, 2025. Please stay tuned.